First of all, I do want to wish to each of you a very blessed Christmas in the name of our coming Lord. I think that's very important that I do just that, because as you know, we are rapidly approaching another festival of the birth of our Lord, and it is good to greet you in view of that. The way we'd like to spend our time is to use about half of the time for me to share a few items with you, and then to give you about half of the time to ask questions of me or share observations with me. That is sort of the approach that we have used in the past, and it seems to work very well, so I thought we might as well use that approach also today. In coming up with the material that I would share with you, I sort of had two different thoughts. I could go into a direction of picking one topic and only speaking on that particular topic, and I have done that in the past in certain cases. Or I could sort of give you an update as to activities and events that are happening in our church body, some of which I'm sure you will find very interesting, others of which you will say, why did he put them on the list? But in that case, I sort of went with the latter approach, and if we do not cover the questions that you would have, or if you want to refer back to any of these topics and talk about them in your section of the time that we are together, that will work out very, very well. I listed, first of all, district conventions. Every 3 years we have, as you know, our parade of district conventions. There are 35 district conventions. Needless to say, the president of the Senate cannot get to all of them. The last time around, I went to 17. This time around, I went to 13. Someone informed me, even in going to 13 district conventions, and I stay for the entire convention, that we in the Lutheran Church still believe that you are saved by grace and not by works. But I do like to go out into the districts because it gives me an opportunity to stay in touch with not only the pastors and full-time church workers of the district, but it also gives me an opportunity to associate with the laymen who occupy a very important place in this church body, and consequently, it gives me a chance to talk with them, answer questions they may have, and just sort of hobnob with them. We did at this last series of district conventions elect 8 new district presidents. Some of them could not return to office because there was a limitation on the office. Others of them simply decided to retire, like Al Marsis. I think he's been on the Council of Presidents for about 25 years, almost an institution in and of himself. But he decided that this time around that he would retire. I don't think that there were any, as I looked through the reports of the vice presidents who covered the other district presidents or the conventions I went to, I don't think there's anything that is exceptionally noteworthy that happened at those district conventions. I do think that the presidium would have some concerns, though, in two areas. One is we notice that in many cases the district conventions are moving more and more in the direction of being a convocation rather than a convention. And there's a marked difference between a convocation where you get together and sort of hoopla, you know, like the LLL does when it has its gatherings, and spiritually uplift one another in word and song, and a convention where you consider resolutions and take action as to the future direction of your district. And I have shared that with the district president, saying I'm really concerned that we do not just move our conventions into convocations. The other thing that I noticed is that in many cases, districts are no longer having essayists. Now, I know that for an essayist, that is, in many cases at district levels, that's when the people go out to get their coffee and go out to get their donuts and what have you. But I do believe that it is extremely important that we not lose that aspect of our district convention, so that we find ourselves still delving into very, very current and very important theological issues and subjects, and using essays to talk on those particular subjects. The second item I listed was the ILC, International Lutheran Conference. That was started quite a few years ago as a council and then moved to a conference, and there are presently about 26 Lutheran church bodies around the world that are a part of that International Lutheran Conference. They met this time in St. Louis. Two conferences back, they had met in Guatemala. The last conference was in Australia. And here in St. Louis this time, because this was the 150th anniversary year of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Some of the things that impress me the most is how the leaders of these overseas partner churches are growing and developing as theological leaders of their church bodies. As I watch some of the new presidents that had been elected and the new bishops that have been appointed, I was genuinely impressed, not only by their knowledge of the scriptures, but also by their absolute commitment to the Lutheran confessions. And to see that happening in a group of 26 Lutheran church bodies around the world is certainly an exciting and great thing to see. Lutheran World Federation, I put that down as Arabic 3, for this reason, that prior to the ILC meeting here in St. Louis on August 1 through 4, some of these individuals had been in Hong Kong for the Lutheran World Federation gathering there. And I would have to tell you that even though some of them are members of the Lutheran World Federation, and this is something that they're more and more beginning to discuss as to whether they should continue in that type of membership, there was almost a uniform agreement that there was a shallowness in the Lutheran World Federation meeting in Hong Kong, and that the process that was used, that whenever any controversial subject which would begin to surface, they would handle it simply by saying, well, we will push that over to the executive committee to deal with it. It would not be adequately discussed and carried to some type of a resolve. And in some cases, some of the people who were there for the first time, I think Archbishop Vonoggs of the Latvian Church, Kukape of the Ingrian Church, they were very, very much turned off by the Lutheran World Federation meeting in Hong Kong and were very, very much encouraged by the International Lutheran Conference meeting that was held here in St. Louis. Theological convocation. Directly following the ILC meeting here in St. Louis, we held a theological convocation. It took place from August the 5th through the 7th. Their meeting was August 1 through 4, and then the convocation was the 5th through the 7th. And the topic that was discussed at the theological convocation is something that is very current and really being talked across our church body at this point in time, church and ministry. I suppose that when Walther thought that he had written his book, Kirke und Amt, that that would forever settle in the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, the question of church and ministry. Well, it didn't. There are those who continue to surface questions in this particular area. Council of Presidents often deal with this. Again, at the last meeting, they expressed several words of upsetness, you might say, with some of the things that are happening in their districts that they feel are not in line with our church's position in church and ministry. On the one hand, for instance, that congregations treat their pastors as hired hands rather than called servants. And if they don't like what their pastor is doing, they just tell him, goodbye, you can go. On the other hand, from the pastor's vantage point, there are some pastors who develop a certain high church attitude over against their laity. If I think of it, it's godly, and therefore you do it. And consequently, that type of tension is out there in some sections of the church. It was for that reason that I decided that the emphasis of the theological convocation would be church and ministry. There were four major presentations made, one by Dr. Johnson, the president of your seminary, one by Dr. Wenthe, and then two district presidents, and I think there were 8 to 10 reactors. The people at the conference were the ILC people, the faculties of the seminaries, the district presidents, and the CTCR. The four major presentations and the reactions to them are in the process now of being put into a booklet that will be shared with all of the pastors of this church. The CTCR, at my request, has prepared 4 Bible studies based on the 4 major presentations, and that will be shared with every congregation in the Synod. And hopefully it will bring about some very meaningful and helpful dialogue within the church on this subject of church and ministry. Lutheran World mailings. I think I mentioned that the last time I was with you. It was about a year ago, maybe a little more than that, that I decided the time had come for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to tell the other Lutheran bodies around the world who we are and what we believe, rather than allowing other people to tell others who we are and what we believe. And so I started a series of mailings to the 177 Lutheran entities around the world. In the first mailing, I simply explained what we were going to be doing, and I sent along with them a document that we had prepared on racism. In the second mailing, I again elaborated and said that we were going to continue every 3 or 4 months to send them this type of mailing, and I sent them a document on the subject of women's ordination. That was a rather interesting one because many of those Lutheran bodies do ordain women. It was interesting to me that the church in Indonesia wrote back and said, we like women, therefore we ordain them. And so I wrote back and I said, we really like women and that's why we don't ordain them. And so the most recent mailing that has gone out is one on the Porvoo Agreement. It was prepared by the systematics department of this seminary and our Fort Wayne Seminary, and it has been sent out also. I intend to continue that type of communication with the overseas church bodies for two reasons. One, it gives us an opportunity to voice to them a clear, concise, confessional Lutheran stance. And secondly, it gives them the opportunity to know who the real Missouri is. I have said that if someone is not going to like us as a church body, I want them to dislike us for what we really are and not dislike us for what somebody else says we are. In general, I would have to say that we have, those mailings have been very well received, and almost everywhere one sees the impact of those mailings beginning to take place. Great Commission convocation took place on August 9 through 10. So you see we went 1, 4, 5, 7, 9, 10. We were really filling August in great shape. The Great Commission convocation, I received a report. The attendance was not as high as at other convocations. Convocations usually run in attendance-wise. The highest has been about 8,500. This convocation was about 6,000 people who were present. As I listened to the various people who reported to me concerning the convocation, I sensed that there is a genuine feeling that the convocations, if continued, and I'm sure they will be continued, need to move back in the direction of the original reason for which they were started. And that was to be an encouragement to our congregations in reaching out with the gospel, not running the entire gamut of theology and church ministry. We had, in connection with the convocation, 150th anniversary extravaganza. I need to say that my mailbox did receive quite a few letters on the basis of the extravaganza. A lot of them were very much upset that it was not more Lutheran and that we had not really sung even such a hymn as A Mighty Fortress in the process. As I look at the extravaganza, it seems to me that we did not read our audience. The extravaganza was set up as though we were reaching out and appealing to people in the age bracket of, you might say, 18 to 25. And that was not the people who tuned in the extravaganza by way of the satellite system. They were people who were considerably higher age-wise. So that kind of, it was both had both its pluses and its minuses. I would say with the 150th anniversary, this has been very, very helpful in that it has really caused our people to say we need to celebrate the fact of 150 years of God's fantastic blessings on our church body. Carl Barth gave excellent direction to it, and as a result of that, I think it really flew well. ELCA. As you know, in August, the ELCA had its churchwide assembly in Philadelphia. They had three ecumenical proposals that they were looking at. Even prior to those three ecumenical proposals coming up before them for consideration, in meeting with the leadership of the ELCA, we indicated that it would be a sad day in American Lutheranism if those ecumenical proposals were adopted. At the General Assembly itself, I was asked to bring greetings. I did, and one of the parts of my greetings was to say to the assembly there, just what I have finished saying, that through the adoption of these, they would find themselves moving away from historic biblical confessional Lutheranism. I sort of thought I might be run off the farm once I had said that, but that was not the case. I didn't know exactly how those resolutions or proposals would be handled. As you know, the ones relative to the Reformed were adopted. The ones relative to establishing fellowship with the Episcopalians was defeated only by a very slim margin, and I'm sure will be adopted the next time. And the one relative to justification was overwhelmingly adopted. CLC, twice a year, Vice President Kuhn, a couple other people from our church body sit down with the leadership of the ELCA. That meeting took place on November 3, and in view of the action taken by ELCA at its General Assembly and some of the press releases that I had released to our people indicating our total disagreement with what they had done, I expected that to be perhaps a rather pointed and heated meeting. It was not. I think the thing that I noticed there is that there is unbelievable unrest in certain segments of the ELCA over against the positions that have been taken. The other thing is there is many people who absolutely just, they really don't care one way or the other. I put the word down, indifference, just absolutely indifferent. We talked some of the things that we tried to bring out to them in that particular meeting of the CLC is, well, if a Presbyterian pastor can now serve a vacancy in an ELCA congregation or even take care of that ELCA congregation, when he comes to confirmation instruction and he comes to the section on the sacrament, what is he going to teach? Or when he comes to the section on predestination, what is he going to teach? And as we shared this with them, they heard us again, but it was rather sad that the thing that they were more concerned about is someone from the Presbyterian Church wants to come across to the ELCA, what are we going to do with his pension program and his health care program? So theology was not the big thing. It was more the practical questions that they were looking at. Council on Mission and Ministry, at the 1992 convention, the Senate established what is called a Council on Mission and Ministry. It was basically to try to coordinate all of the various activities of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And as it was structured, it came out to be an EDSEL. It just didn't work. The outgrowth of it was that I have now redirected the Council on Mission and Ministry in making it a forum in which our people, our leaders, can sit down together and address key subjects. Three forums back, we took two particular M&M meetings and addressed the entire subject of the family, because an erosion is taking place in the family across our nation that is unbelievable. The last time we then moved, and will for the next two meetings of the M&M, addressed ethnicity. I don't need to tell you that our country is going through a complete change, complexion-wise, when it comes to ethnicity as we move into the 21st century. And it seems to me those are the kinds of issues where this particular group can serve best the church. 1998 Synodical Convention, the dates are July 11 through 17. The floor committees will meet over the Memorial weekend. People often ask me, what are the key issues that will be coming before the convention? I would say the number one key issue that will be coming before the convention is the Blue Ribbon Committee report, which will be studying the matter of a restructuring of our Synod as we move into the 21st century. I would also hope that coming in at that particular point in time, I will be sharing with the church a 3/10 proposal or emphasis. It is an emphasis in which I will suggest that we as a church body need to take the next 3 years, the last 3 years of the 20th century, really to tool ourselves up for aggressive evangelism outreach with the gospel, only then to take the first decade of the 21st century and have it a decade dedicated to strong outreach with the gospel by our people, our pastors, and our congregations. There will be other issues undoubtedly that will come before us, worship, close communion, a variety of issues. But if I could identify the two that I think and hope will be the main issues, it would be the Blue Ribbon Committee and the 3/10 proposal. Wherever I go out in the church, number 13 is asked, what about Russia? When the Duma of Russia found itself, making the proposals they did relative to religious freedom in Russia, and Yeltsin, because of pressure brought to bear from other world leaders, vetoed the first draft. He also indicated that if certain changes were made, he would in turn then sign the next draft. Certain changes were made in the law that was to be adopted. I don't think it improved it. If anything, I think they actually gained ground in what they were trying to achieve. And Yeltsin then did go ahead and sign that. People say, well, what will this do with the work that our church body or that the LLL is doing in Russia? It's very uncertain at this point in time just exactly how that's going to impact. It's often depending on where you are in Russia that you're going to have to answer that question. Because when you think that it goes over 11 time zones, they do not have the unity that we would have in 4 time zones across our country. But in meeting with the leadership of the Ingren Lutheran Church, which is the one that we are working to establish pulpit and altar fellowship with, it would seem that the Ingren Lutheran Church is going to make it possible for us to bring the work that we are doing in Russia under the umbrella of the Ingren Lutheran Church, and that we will be able to continue all of those activities in Russia. Ingren Lutheran Church is not a large church body, has a Finnish background, but definitely it's a church body that wants to be a confessional Lutheran church body. You might say that they are a church body that is developing in theology. They are not. They do not have a long history of theological development and study, but they really want to be a church body that is a conservative and confessional Lutheran church. And they can give to us something, and we can give to them something. And it would seem to me that one of the things that we can give to them is a clear, concise declaration of what the Scriptures teach and what the Lutheran confessions also teach. Another question that is often asked when I'm out in the church, and I have to watch because I have about 3 minutes here quickly, is the question, how's it going health-wise? Well, outside of the fact that I have a cold, it's going great. Every 3 months, I find myself going in for a checkup. I keep receiving nothing but very positive reports. And the last time that I went in, I think, very moving situation, and that the doctor then sent to me a written report afterwards, and he wrote these words, blood chemistry panel is entirely normal. I believe there are many miracles that happen in your life and mine in answer to our prayers to God. And I see this as one of those miracles that God has caused to happen in the life of Albury, thanks to the prayers of God's people and the goodness of God. Under 15, we have 3 new university presidents. One has already been selected at MEC1, Patrick Ferry. I will be going yet today to California, where on Friday of this week, we will be interviewing and selecting a president for Irvine. And the first week in March, the presidency at Bronxville will be decided also. There are many new resource materials that are coming out of the president's office. I suppose I could have listed them. We've tried to supply the church with a lot of printed helps that I think will help the church. We have a president's newsletter, a noble task, booklets on that we've prepared on worship and catechesis. The most recent thing that we started were the whatabouts. They're like a bulletin in which we deal with certain subjects. The whatabouts we dealt with in the first 3 was homosexuality, women's ordination, and the Christian family. A new series of whatabouts are coming out in January. They will deal with the gospel, the scriptures, death and dying, ELCA, LCMS, and communion fellowship. These are again being well received out in the church. The first 3, over 100,000 of those were requested by our congregations. And the thing that makes it nice for them is that they are free to them thanks to a grant through CPH. Another booklet is coming out for all of our pastors and principals will receive it. It's on the subject of prayer. It's entitled, Let's Pray, A Study in Prayer and Devotional Life. I'm now on the World Wide Web. I'm sure all of you men, or most of you men, are into the computer thing, so if you want to see what's available through the president's office, it's www.lcms.org/president. Also, we introduced email, and I would have to say I don't know whether that's good or bad. That gives a lot more people access to the president. And now when they bring me these email messages that thick, you know, in addition to getting the letters that are coming in, we get all of this email stuff. And I told my assistant, don't come up with another solution. We have enough to handle. I put down additional office space, and then my time would be consumed here. You perhaps have heard that the the Senate has reached across Interstate 44 and purchased the Sunset Building, which is directly across the interstate, for additional office space. The need, the largest growing areas that we have staff-wise are in the LCEF, the Foundation, and the Mission Department. If you take the staff at the International Center, 27% of the staff people are in the Mission Department, and I think that's great, 27%. The LCEF is continuing to grow, and the Foundation and the needs of the Foundation are also growing. I think the Foundation now has about 117 employees who go out and work throughout the church. But that office building across the way was purchased. The initial thought had come up, well, let's add to the existing building. And I said, no way. That building came up for access. We first explored lease, then found that it was for sale. And it was purchased for $9.5 million. We rent the fourth floor and the second floor out. The first floor is parking. Second floor and fourth floor. And we're on the third floor. And we're allowing the lessees of the first, second, and fourth floor to make the payments, which is nice. All right, with that, I have finished my run, and I think what I'd like to do now is give you the opportunity to ask any questions of me or share any observations, and even the sticky wicky ones can be asked. I always say that out in the church, and invariably when I say that at a district convention, a layman comes up and says, I got a sticky wicky one. Well, if you got a sticky wicky one, go for it. Okay, who would like to be up to bat first? All right.
Thank you, Dr. Berry. By the year 2000, figures have come to me that 2,900 of our current pastors will be reaching the age of 65, with the seminaries being able to provide at best about 600 pastors. What do you foresee for the pastorate in the Missouri Synod?
All right. First of all, at the present time, as of the last Council of Presidents meeting, there were 500 calling vacancies. Now, that's a lot of calling vacancies. I think that's the highest number we've had over the last 3 years, and an additional 250 non-calling vacancies. So we have 750 congregations out in the Senate who are presently vacant. You ask, what about moving into the future? Without a doubt, as we move into the future, and we have this group of second career people who will be coming into retirement age, coupled with the group that have gone through the system, we will find ourselves in a drastic shortage for pastors. And that's why it is so extremely important that the pastors and congregations of this church body do everything that they possibly can, both to help financially, but also to encourage men to enter into the office of the public pastoral ministry. The same would also hold true in our teaching ministry, we don't have a second career group that comes into that aspect. So, will there be a lot of vacancies? Yes. My big fear is that we as a church body will adopt a maintenance mindset and say we have this many congregations that we have to serve, and not recognize clearly that in the process we need to be planting many more congregations that will also need pastors, so that we have an expansionist mindset as a church body and not just a maintenance mindset. Yes, we need more pastors, many of them. All right.
Good morning. Good morning. Some of us are aware of the new series of Herman Zassa essay translations,
yes.
The first one being Union and Confession. Could you give us some of the background on that project and tell us what we can expect in the future?
All right. There has been for some time a desire on the part of many people to get the essays, the writings of Herman Zassa printed. And the reason that it did not happen is because there was no money. You know, it's interesting how many things are dictated by dollars. But the money became available for that, and I believe the first volume of the Herman Zassa essays is coming out very, very shortly. It's not very far down the pipe. There will be other such writings of Hermann Sasse that will be printed as we move into the future. But it will not just be limited to Hermann Sasse. There are things that have gone out of print in our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that need to be brought back into print. Just yesterday, I sent a note off to Concordia Publishing House. There's a little booklet, it's not a volume, entitled Adventures in Christian Stewardship by Ryan. It is one of the best books that I have ever seen on total stewardship. Stewardship of the word, stewardship of your prayer life, stewardship, you know, it covers the whole gamut, not just stewardship of money. And some of these need to be reprinted. They need to be produced at a very economical price to people. And I believe you're going to see more and more of that beginning to happen thanks to the foundation that is willing to make it possible. All right?
I had heard rumors that the Missouri Synod might be reinvited to join some of these ecumenical dialogues, like with the Lutheran Roman Catholic dialogue, and I was wondering what the latest is on that.
All right, I have not heard that yet. So, that rumor hasn't reached my office. Go ahead.
Well, so officially, we're not in the next round.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that was a very disappointing thing because we wanted to be involved in the Roman Catholic dialogues and we wanted to be involved in the Episcopalian dialogues. All of these we asked to be involved in. And quite frankly, we were dealt out of it. We indicated that again and again we'd like to be. Elka had made the statement, well, if you want to deal with them on your own, that's fine, but we're going to deal with them on our own, kind of as the only Lutherans that exist in the United States. Well, I have not heard that we are going to be getting an invitation to join those dialogues. If those invitations come, yes, we will certainly join them because I think we have something to contribute to those dialogues. All right? Did that answer your question? Yeah, but I have not received any official notice. I can tell you one, excuse me, doctor, I can tell you one notice that I did see. I received an invitation to attend a meeting of the Promise Keepers, an executive, you know, their board of the Promise Keepers. And I thought, well, I can't attend all the meetings. Who could I find that would be a very interesting individual who could attend? And I scanned through my mind. I said, well, I'm going to send Don Matzett. So Don went. All right.
Thank you very much, Dr. Barry. You know, the previous question related to Hermann Sasse prompted me to ask this question, namely, recently we have received request from some university professors in China related to the project of translating Martin Luther's work mm-hmm. in Chinese language, even though some work has been done before, but definitely not enough in that particular need. Do you have some opinion about this? I mean, since you mentioned about Russia, and I think another big theater is definitely China, and that complex of Asia, and then very little known, I mean, that is Luther, oh, I can also mention about Walter, even Hermann Sasse, perhaps, and other literatures as well. I just wonder about this kind of really big, fantastic proposal or project related to us, I mean, as a challenge here.
All right. I think all of you are pretty much aware of the foundation that is making these dollars available to us. It is the Schwann Foundation, the ice cream people. It was rather interesting. I was down in Chattanooga, and I was talking with some 7th and 8th graders, and I asked them, do you know any of the other presidents of the Senate? And one little boy got up, and he said, Schwann. I thought, well, heavens to Murgatroy. You know, I thought he might say, you know, Bowman or Preuss or something like that. But Schwann, I said, well, why do you, maybe Grandma talked with him about Schwann's catechism. I said, well, why do you say Schwann? And he said, because that's the man that started the ice cream company. I said, no, not really. All right, the Schwann Foundation has the problem of getting rid of about $30 million a year. It's kind of a nice problem. And they have a very strong commitment to doing two things. One is reaching out with the gospel, and two, promoting and carrying forward confessional Lutheranism. They have made possible dollars for the translation of certain works into the Russian language, other works into the Latvian language. They have made possible many of the mission projects that the mission department is presently taking care of. And I would think the project that you mentioned, good brother, is one that you should propose to them, because I believe they would be open to considering that type of thing. When Schwann set up his foundation, and the foundation is basically worth $1 billion, and you cannot spend the foundation, you can only spend the interest from it. And he set it up so that the interest would be spent, and he authorized seven entities to whom the dollars could go, and one of them is the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And at first they did not want us to say too much about it, because they didn't want to get inundated with requests from all over everywhere asking for money, and I understand that. But now they found a way of processing that and just say, all of these requests we don't even consider. But I would say that, yes, what the project that you're talking, translating Luther into the Chinese language or what have you, is something that they would be very open to, I would think. All right, next question.
Dr. Barry, further to your meeting with the ELCA in Chicago in November, I heard this report just this week that some agreement was to be declared between the ELCA and Lutheran Church Missouri Synod with regards to the military chaplaincy, that the decision of this summer would in no way affect the military chaplaincy agreement that we have. Is that true, and doesn't that raise some problems with regards to who they might have serving in some positions?
All right, that topic surfaced at the CLC meeting I referred to. And the secretary of the ELCA was to draft a statement and route it to the president of the Missouri Synod as well as to Bishop Anderson that would deal with this particular subject. He has drafted that statement. It has come down to my office. I have studied it, but I do not feel that it is acceptable in its present format. And so I am in the process of structuring a response saying, in order for us to be able to sign on the dotted line here, there are certain basic changes that will have to be made in this statement. So it's still in a negotiating stage with the ELCA. Our concern is that a chaplain, head officer, whatever you want to call him, would then decide if Elka is in fellowship with the Presbyterian, with all of these other people. Therefore, we don't need to have a Lutheran chaplain anymore. We'll bring in a Presbyterian, United Church of Christ, or what have you, and let them serve the Lutherans. And we're just saying that is not acceptable. But the first draft that was prepared was not acceptable to me, and I have now started to prepare a proposal, counter-proposal. All right, good questions. The only thing is we need a few more.
Dr. Barry, welcome. My name is David Faulkner. I'm an admissions counselor here at the seminary. And in two of the four Concordia universities that I've traveled to so far, prospective students, pre-seminary students, have come to me and have said, at our chapels, we administer open communion. What will you do today? Can you describe to me the proper channels for correcting that and how I might help as an admissions counselor here?
Yes, I would say if that situation does exist, you should write a letter to the Board of Higher Education, and you should copy that to the president's office. And that way the president is alerted to the concern that has been raised, and I can in turn, through my representative on the Board of Higher Education, give guidance and direction toward it. If that situation exists, definitely a letter expressing concern should be addressed to the BHE and copied to the President of the Senate. All right? Okay, other questions?
Again, Jake Gillard. This is my second year here. You mentioned earlier about some strife within the ELCA since the decision this summer. I'm wondering, I'm not saying that we should go out and solicit congregations, but are we open to accepting them, and are we being proactive in receiving those who do want to walk with us?
All right. When I was at the General Assembly in Philadelphia, after I had made my seven-minute sharing, after I shared my seven-minute remarks with the General Assembly, they then took me to another room where there were several people of the press, and they asked the question, you know, they could ask any questions that they wanted to on the basis of what I had said or whatever they wanted to explore. And one of the questions was this thing of what about congregations that may find it troublesome to continue as a part of the ELCA fellowship? Would Missouri be open to considering and receiving them? I used a statement, and they published the first half of it, not the second half. The first thing I said was I felt that we in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod should not become flypaper-ish and kind of go out and try to just grab ELCA members or ELCA congregations. It's rather interesting. I guess I dated myself age-wise, because when I got back to the International Center, there were a couple young women who said, "What did you mean by flypaper?" For those of you who are younger and have never experienced this in the Midwest, they used to have these things, and you would stretch them out like that, and they were real sticky, and a fly would come up and land on them, and that was the end of the fly. So I said we shouldn't be doing that, out trying to woo people away from or congregations away from the ELCA. But then I went on to say, and this is a part they didn't quote, but we dare not do this either. We dare not put our hands out and say, you know, we don't want you. You may not be what we really want. And somehow we have tried to communicate. In fact, after the last president's newsletter went out, I was contacted by three ELCA congregations and pastors who said that they want to explore fellowship with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We really want to give them the opportunity where we can sit down with them and tell them about our church body, what we stand for, and that should they wish to come in the direction of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, it would be a confessional statement on their part, and they would be coming a part of a new family. So we're open to that. On the one hand, we don't want to be flypaperish. On the other hand, we dare not do this. And there are congregations now who are beginning to ask those questions.
Good morning, Dr. Barry. On your points on the Blue Ribbon Committee on Restructuring, could you talk about the goals for that group, or like what the process is going to be for that group?
All right.
A little bit. Thank you.
Let me give you a little history on that. Prior to the last convention, the 1995 convention, about a year prior to it, someone routed some concerns. Actually, it was one of the officers of the Synod routed some concerns to the Commission on Constitutional Matters, saying, "What does this mean in view of our Constitution? Our Constitution says this, and the bylaws of the Synod says this." And so automatically, the Commission on Constitutions, the CCM, found itself having to make a ruling. And the ruling they came back with is, "Synod, we hate to tell you this, but your Constitution and your bylaws and your handbook are not in line with each other. You are saying some things in the bylaws and some things in the handbook that is absolutely opposed to your Constitution." Well, this got the attention of a few people. And they came up with the thought, what are we going to do with this? And they were contacting attorneys, and everybody was in a dizzy about it. And three members of the CCM came to me and they said, "It would never be solved on the convention floor in 1995. To throw to 1,400 delegates a discussion like that, that's disaster. What you need to do is you have a right as the president of the Synod to appoint a special blue ribbon committee who can address it." So I went ahead and appointed this committee with view to addressing that problem, but also saying, I think you need to take a look at the structure and say, are there some structural things that need to be adjusted? I appointed the committee. I think there are 12 people on that task force, and they have studied the entire structure of the Synod, and they are now coming with recommendations for streamlining certain things, as well as recommendations for doing certain things that will bring the Constitution and the bylaws in line with each other. I have intentionally absented myself from the committee. I didn't want people saying, "Oh, that's Barry trying to get something done there." I have just intentionally stayed away from them, let them do their thing. They're knowledgeable, very knowledgeable people, and I think their report is more and more beginning to gain acceptance out in the church because they're seeing some wisdom in certain aspects of it. Now, there'll be certain things that'll be changed, but that's the history behind it. That help a little?
Morning, President Barry.
Morning.
By the way, remission looks really good on you. I remember a few years back where you were delivered to the back door.
Yes.
And it was good to see you here today.
I drove across the lawn here, and I thought for sure Dr. Kuhn would maybe be forever banned as an alumni.
We're glad to have you here today. My question is this: as I watch television, I see the LCMS commercials come on. I was wondering what type of reception are they having amongst the general population, if you have an ear to that. And the other thing is, it's something that we're going to continue to do.
All right. Again, as I was going out into the church, the question was being raised by so many people, why can't we do what the Mormons do in having these little TV blurbs? And I would say, well, first of all, we would not want to do what the Mormons do because we would want them to be a witness to Jesus Christ. But then the other thing was immediately money. We need money. And a foundation of which I have previously referred was approached in this particular case and gave us $2 million for the beginning to place, to develop and place these type of blurbs onto television. I think that they have been extremely well received. It's very interesting. I'm a number of people who have said, of our own church, you know, hey, it seems kind of nice to see LCMS up there before the world. There are other people who have also responded. It's rather interesting. I mentioned three Elka pastors who wanted to explore Missouri. A Baptist pastor called and said, you know, I think my congregation would like to find out more about you as a church body because maybe we're more in line with you than we are with the Baptists that we are presently aligned with. And I said, well, I don't know about that. But anyway, that's it. And we still have a few dollars with which to do it. I think that we have to be very sure that we don't just have folksy kind of things with letting balloons fly, but that we also have a very clear Christ-centered witness as to what we are and what we do. And somehow between the folksy warmness and the clear witness of what we stand for, I'm sure we will continue to do it, and they have been well received. All right?
I've got a good sticky one for you. I had the privilege of being a pastoral delegate at the last two synodical conventions, and certainly thankful to the Lord for your leadership. One of the most recent one, we voted on the Otten situation on a certification, and at the time I voted for it, thought, good idea, let's go on to the next business. Then it occurred to me later that that whole issue of bringing it up at the convention and have the convention or the Synod at large do something about a certification, wouldn't that require bypassing the current synodical bylaws that says the seminary has to certify it?
Yes.
I mean, isn't that kind of a...
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? I mean, it seems
I think the resolution that was adopted at the convention is that the president should do something to study the entire matter and bring some type of a report back to the convention. Mm-hmm. It also indicated the people who should be selected. In other words, there were three that were selected from the reconcilers group at what we call blind draw. You have 187 and you just went through and in blind draw we pulled three of those out. That group made its initial study, which was in turn shared with the church. And one of the suggestions was that then a seminary group would address the matter of certification. The first group said there is still a difference of opinion between ourselves and Pastor Otten when it comes to the Eighth Commandment and journalistic ethics. Mm-hmm. The second group then studied it from the seminary and reaffirmed that. There is only one group that can certify, or two groups that can certify a person for pastoral ministry in our Lutheran Church, and that's this seminary and the Fort Wayne Seminary. And it cannot be done by the president of the Synod, which some people think he has the power to do.
Right.
It cannot be done by the Synod in convention. It has to be done according to the handbook.
Well, that was kind of the gist of my question. It seems like the seminary gets an egg in their face no matter what happens with the committees, that they are kind of in this awkward position of having to restate their previous findings.
Yeah. So, well, I think in the fact that the seminary faculty had a committee that carefully studied the issue, and then came up with a ruling. That speaks well for the seminary. I don't think that speaks bad for the seminary. I think that speaks well, because they did consider it. They didn't just say no, they considered it, and then came up with a reason why they couldn't approve it. I see we've reached the 11 o'clock time slot, and so what I want to... Whoops! You want to get a quick one in? Try it. Can we get one more in? We'll get a quick one in here. All right.
Thank you, Dr. Barry.
To do that to someone, isn't it?
There have been at least a few articles in the past year in the Synod's publications regarding the thought of changing the name of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I wanted to know if there is any discussion either amongst the Council of Presidents, the Presidium, or do you foresee any action at an upcoming convention?
All right. Very briefly, the Board of Directors has appointed a committee of six people to come up with procedure, not to change, a procedure that should be followed for a possible name change of the Synod. And they will then lay the procedure out, and then if the procedure is agreeable, the study will be made. That doesn't mean the name will be changed, but the study will be made. We'll see both the pluses and the minuses of doing it, and then the Synod would have to make a decision, I believe, in a synodical convention to change the name of the Synod. So all we have at this point in time is a group that is to establish procedure. How do we study it? How do we decide whether we should or should not? Again, I want to wish all of you a very blessed Christmas in the Master's name, and also that you, God would bless you and daily place the hand of his blessing on you as you prepare for full-time service within our church and the faculty, as you prepare men for full-time service in our church. God bless.